Raised Rowdy.
All right, guys, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast, and my name is Kurt Ozon.
And I'm Nikki T.
And we have our esteemed guest, Mr. Chase Rice. Welcome to the pod again.
Feels good to be esteemed.
Yes.
Welcome back. It's been a year, maybe? Has it been that long?
Almost. Yeah.
It would have been last year around this time that I put out Go Down Singing.
Yeah. Well, welcome back, and we're here to celebrate. From the time of recording, 10 days until your next record comes out.
Ten days. Congrats, brother. Mm-hmm. I remember you playing us that song with Wyatt.
Two-tone.
When we did the last pod.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. And we were stoked to hear it.
Yeah, I'd probably just written it.
Yeah. It was cool. And we love Wyatt, so Wyatt's I know he's awesome. All over this album as well.
That shouldn't have gone the way it did. It was, I had two songs written. Wrote them here in Nashville. And then I had a 3-day writing retreat with Wyatt and Oscar, and I'd met Wyatt, but I'd never written with him.
Yeah.
And like, that shouldn't have worked as well as it did. It's interesting. Everything Oscar and I do shouldn't make sense, but it does. And it's great. I think, it's gotten zero mainstream, like blowing up, whatever that means anymore these days.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it's building something that's heading somewhere good. And we had to recreate the foundation.
Yep.
With the last two records.
Totally.
Did that. Now I'm just waiting for something to pop. Maybe it never will. I don't know. But it's like, I just feel like we're just making great stuff. But that should have never worked as well as it did. We kept talking about how, like, me and Oscar, these songs, this one's great. We're recording all these. And Wyatt openly said after, he was like, I didn't think you guys were serious. But we did. We recorded all nine, and then we wrote one more. So that would have given us 11. Then we wrote one more with Cleto from Flatland. And Oscar's on every single song on this record. He's even saying, like, this is never going to happen again.
Yeah.
So
where did y'all do the writing retreat?
A place called Rollinsville, Colorado. It's right outside of Denver, kind of, a couple hours. Rhiannon booked the Airbnb. Great job, Rhiannon.
Thank you.
Great spot. Is an A-frame just up in the mountains. We played Red Rocks with Dirks, mm-hmm. and drove up, and we saw I saw a sign for an old, you know, worn down hotel that's not open anymore called the Eldora Lodge. Turned to them, I was like, I don't know what, like, this is gonna be sick. Like, we're seeing all sorts of stuff that's just it's good for creativity. And drove to Rollinsville, got in the cabin. We would have gotten there. We wrote three songs that first day, which is crazy because we didn't get there until after lunch. We ended up writing Eldora, I think second or third, but I turned to him. I was like, I don't know what Eldora is, but we're going to write that. And it turns out it's a town right next to Rollinsville. So we did Rollinsville has a place called the Stage Stop. It's not even open. They got a pizza spot, a little small, cool little town. We hung out there a little bit for lunch and just kind of bopped around one day we went to Boulder for lunch, hung out there, went and saw the stadium, went to Nederland, Colorado. There's a book in the cabin that said Nederland, and so I googled it and was like, oh, it's a town 20-30 minutes from here. So we did stuff like that during the day, but then we'd write. I mean, we wrote like crazy. So we did nine songs in 3 days and recorded all of them.
That's so cool.
Do you think that if your Airbnb was like in the Southwest or like in Florida, you would have written a completely different record?
100%. Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's the move.
Well, I Hate Cowboys was like, these are great songs. Let's put them out. Mm-hmm. It's a whole new thing. Let's put them out. Go Down Singing was a B part of that, I guess you could call it. This was an accident. But an awesome one. I love the West. I'm out there all the time anyway. So I wanted to write out there. I was thinking Montana, but Colorado worked great. But that really, really made me start thinking about writing retreats. Like, I don't write at all in Nashville as much anymore. I wrote three on this record in Nashville, I guess. But I really haven't been writing in Nashville much at all. And it made it an actual solidified album. It's not a concept record, but it's got a lot of references to Colorado, Montana, Texas, the West, which is where I am half the year. So I wanted it to be that. I didn't imagine it was going to go this well. And now I listen to the record, I'm like, it's old to me now. It's a year old. We wrote it last year. And there's already stuff I want to change about it, but it's going to be new to everybody else. The cool part was, it was we wrote them all, got back to Nashville. We realized when we were writing, like getting into the voice memos, we'd put the phone down. I'd sing it 5 or 6 times after you write it. You don't know it that well. I'm reading lyrics while you're singing, trying to figure out melodies, whatever. But when we really locked each song in, we realized, like, that's a really unique way to hear my voice that we'd never figured out before. And I'd never figured that out before. Because usually you do the work tape, it sounds like shit. Mm-hmm. You think you got a song, and then you go record it. But this was like, we really locked in. First day, we realized the better the work tapes are, the more I'm going to go listen to them in bed with my AirPods. And that's when I was like, God dang, this is cool. I love these songs, because we actually focused on getting a quality work tape in there. So we took that same mindset, went into my attic in my farm in Nashville, had a microphone like this here, and then one on a guitar, and just did one take like that, no ears in. So we didn't have to build a track first, and then... And when I said build a track with a band, mm-hmm. not like a track guy track.
Yeah, we can tell from this record for sure.
No, nothing in this. But we wanted the one take thing. So everything's one take. It's raw. There's a lot of stuff I listen to. And the only thing I'm hearing that concerns me, which I don't know if it matters, but I mean, if you listen to Hot Country, the playlist, or anything on radio, which is all the most mainstream stuff, or anything that Apple or Amazon has, it's the main playlist. It won't fit in. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to sonically fit in. The lyrics and stuff, there's a lot of really cool lyrics, and there's really cool storytelling in it, but sonically, it just doesn't make sense compared to even, like, Luke's music. Like, it's just not that mainstream sound. And I don't know how that's going to come across to people, but... At the end of the day, we thought about it. It's like, okay, we realized afterwards, like, we just made a record that nobody else could make. Like, nobody in the world could have made this album the way we made it. That doesn't mean it's the best album ever, but it's the best that we could do at that time with the songs that we had. And hopefully people like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will, especially when it comes from such a real place, and it's like you and these great writers and great producers are just kind of holing up and making great music, doing it, you know, the more old-fashioned way.
Uh-huh. It is. I mean, yeah, it's not like we did anything groundbreaking. I mean, a lot of records were made in one take like that, usually with a live band around it. But it was cool to, like, get the guitar vocal first and then build the band around that. The next day, we'd do those 3 songs that we did the night before.
So no click.
No click.
Yeah.
We didn't do a click on the last 2 records either. This one's definitely – this one's no – anything. The only one that had kind of a click in it was Two-Tone. Mm-hmm. It was like a Japanese old metronome thing that just had a little beat going in the back. Mm-hmm. And you can actually hear that in the song. But even that's not on it's not on a, you know, stiff metronome perfect thing.
Like, yeah, it's not Pro Tools.
It wavers. So yeah. That was weird, because then, I mean, Wyatt was playing all that picking stuff. He's a crazy good guitar player.
Yeah.
So he had to be locked into that thing. But man, it was just a really fun way to make an album. And like I said, I don't know what it's gonna do, but I just feel like if I just keep making the best music that I can make, that's like, when you hear it, you're like, yep, that's Chase Rice record. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's ever gonna end up in me getting to where the goal was originally in my life and my career, which was like, you wanna sell out arenas, you wanna mm-hmm. sell out stadiums. But I really hope people like it and come to the shows, and it's been already happening where people are coming to the shows not just wanting to hear. They're not coming to hear Eyes on You as much anymore. Some people are, but I want them to come listen to want to hear the new songs, and that's happened with the last 2 records. But this album to me is even higher quality than those as far as song quality, because it's our 3rd record into writing the way we've been writing, and I've already got it planned. The Cowboys and the Go Down Singer record were together. They were paired together. Appalachia is going to have a sequel, which is going to be called Appalachia. Or Eldora is going to have a sequel, which is going to be called Appalachia. And I'm going to go write that one in Carolina.
Sick.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, you've done the West.
Yeah.
You're going to come back home.
I'm going to do the East. And there's a little bit of, I don't know, like even Eldora, it's like the couple, you wouldn't even know if you don't catch it, but the couple had an abortion. And there's one line that gives that away. There's hints of that in just like a shameful way of life in this album and some sad stuff. I want Appalachia to be, it's almost like you're going west to run from something. Appalachia, I want it to be more you're coming home to face your life and have hope.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be more of a hopeful record on Appalachia. I don't know. It's not written yet.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself like maybe picking up new techniques or learning new things like writing and cutting records this way?
Yeah. I mean, I had to become a way better guitar player just keeping up with Wyatt.
Yeah.
So he taught me a lot of stuff. So that's helped. I'm playing on every single song in a 20 song set except for 3 songs. Mm. So that's made me a better player. It's just the mindset of like, I'm going to go back to what I was doing before Trax took over Nashville, which was just writing songs on a guitar. Like when we wrote Cruise, we wrote that on a guitar. We didn't have a track. We built a track. Have I ever played that for you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I thought safe. I did. Yep. It's a weird, I thought I did that last year. But like that's, we wrote it on a guitar though.
Yeah.
And for me as a writer, that just makes me write stories better. I don't focus on, like when I was writing Eyes on You, wrote it with Gorley, he's on the piano. Mm-hmm. Ready, Set, Roll. Like I was just, that was just the bro country era where I was like, I gotta write another Cruise. Driving in a truck down a dirt road. I was focused on melody more than who gives a shit what we're saying. I just want to write a bunch of songs that people are going to sing along to. I don't really give a shit if they know what they're singing or not. This is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
And when you write with the guitar, it forces you to, the lyrics matter a lot more. And some people could look at that and be like, well, duh. But I was young and partying my ass off. Yeah. I wanted to have fun on stage. I don't move a whole lot as much as I used to anymore. So it's a different phase in life, and I'm just following where I'm at in life and putting it in the songs.
I mean, in 2025, it's easy to say, like, well, duh.
Yeah.
But it's like, I was also in writing rooms in 2016, and everyone's like, well, we got to do the Sam Hunt thing, you know, yeah. Or we got to do, that's just what people were doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, hindsight's always 2020.
Yeah. I think everybody, not everybody, probably, but everybody looks at something and says, I want to do that. I don't care what genre it is.
Of course.
Like everybody looks at something and says, I want to do that. For me now, and especially when you're young to songwriting and young as an artist and don't know exactly who you are yet. But for me now, that didn't cross our minds on this album. It was more just like, let's just write some songs, see what happens.
I think there's power in that for sure. And if you're thinking about it, like talking about going back to you saying this doesn't fit in the stuff that's on the mainstream of country music right now. If you're writing for what's happening in country music right now, you're fucking up. Like you need to be writing what you feel in your heart and what you think is going to be where the genre is going or where it used to be that you hope it goes back to.
Or you create your own thing that everybody else is going to follow.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way to create your own thing that everybody else is going to want to be a part of.
I mean, Cruise didn't sound like what was on the radio at the time.
That's true. And I don't know, like I read something somewhere when I think it was the Traveler record came out, the Stapleton Traveler record. He was quoted as saying somewhere like, well, there goes my country music career. Cause he just, it didn't fit what was popular. And then obviously the CMAs happened and he explodes. Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you never know what's going to make something pop or if it ever is, but if you're sticking to who you are as a, like, just who you are as a human being and putting that in your songs,
yes,
then you're creating something that nobody else could create. But you're also relating to a lot of people because we're all human beings. Like, we all have similar stories in one way or another. So, like, Harold and Bernice, circa 1943, those are my grandparents. That's not even their true story, but somebody has grandparents that live that exact story.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, speak up if you got those grandparents that had that story. But I was just in Missoula, actually. And the couple that I stay with a lot out there, Jess was like, man, people are losing their minds in Superior right now. Like, they never thought they'd hear their town in a song. So it's cool. Like, it's cool to be the first person to ever put Superior, Montana in a song. Maybe I'm not. I don't know. But I feel like we might be.
For those people you are.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's really cool. And I actually was driving. I live in my truck out west, right? You know, for most of the summer. And now I do all that to lead up to hunting season, which now it's here. I'm like,
yeah,
hell yeah. But this summer I was driving to Coeur d'Alene from Missoula, and I stopped in Superior on the way. And I actually spent 4th of July in Superior this year. And that's what I was doing. I was going to Superior, and then I was going to go to Coeur d'Alene. But I drove past where I was going in Superior because I wanted to get off in, like, the main Superior exit and where the town is. And then I went back to the house I was going to. But I did that on purpose because I wanted to hear that song driving through Superior, Montana. And I'm looking around like, fuck, we did it.
Yeah.
In my head, exactly what I wanted that song to be is what it became. It was cool.
Well, country music, man, I mean, it's about stories. It's about tales, whether they're yours or someone else's that you're kind of, you know, channeling. That's what makes it great is the melodies are important, right? That's what keeps people listening to a song over and over. But the lyrics and you feeling connected to them is what really moves the needle, in my opinion, for a song.
For sure. I've talked with Morgan a good bit about it. Like, he's always said, man, I love hearing my music. I've never felt that way. Like, I never wanted, well, at first, like when we wrote Eyes on You, I remember thinking, oh, there's a banger. Mm-hmm. Wanted to hear it, but I, like, now I wouldn't want to hear that. I don't want to go back and listen to it. Production wise, it's not what I'm into anymore. And I battled a lot on production my whole career, where I was trying to create what we're doing exactly pretty much right now, but using people that were like Chris DiStefano. He's a track guy. Like, that's what he specialized in back then. So I was trying to push him into something that, and sometime it worked and we created some really cool stuff together. And this is not on Chris at all, or knock on Chris at all. He's crazy talented.
Scary talented.
But I was trying to utilize him to make this music over here when this is what he does. And now I listen to it. Like, I wish we could, not as many people probably like it because they're so used to what it is, but I wish I could create an album over here of the songs that I did back then and see what it would sound like. I bet it'd be a lot different. I think I'm gonna.
Yeah.
I'm independent now, so just I can do whatever I want.
Do whatever the fuck you want, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, that's creative expression. You know, however you hear that song in your head or however you want to express it in a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think honestly too, the fans will love that. Yeah. Hearing another version of how you thought this might be when you rolled it out.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's super powerful.
How we would do that. Yeah,
the Beatles did it. You know, they put Let It Be out and they felt it was overproduced. So they did Let It Be Naked. And so they pulled all the strings and stuff off and just kind of let the song speak.
Really?
Yeah.
Sturgill has a song called Let Go. Just Let Go. And I heard his Metamodern Sounds of Country Music version before I heard his Cut and Grass version. And that was cool that he did that. I had no idea that it was even on the Cut and Grass record. But when I heard one of them's Bluegrass, Cut and Grass, and then Metamodern is weird and vibey.
Yeah.
So you can recreate stuff.
There's a precedent for that for sure. And like Childers cut stuff different ways. And I think why not?
Yeah. All the Eyes on You is like this weird goth sounding song. Making a metal song. Featuring Hardy.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, it's like, I think the people that listened to it and enjoyed it back then would love a reinterpretation of it too, honestly.
Yeah, well, most of the people that loved it back then have all gotten older with me, so there's probably a good group of people who would want to hear something.
Ready, set, let's banjo roll. Get it?
We do have a banjo in that song a lot.
Yeah, write that down.
Yeah,
she's like absolutely not. Yeah.
We do have a fiddle and a banjo on that song now live, which is so different. That we play them now completely different than they sound from the record.
I was actually going to ask about that. How has the new Chase Rice 2.0 stuff influenced the live show?
I play Eyes on You, Gonna Want It Tonight, Lonely If You Are, and Drink a Beer Talk Got Him In. Those are the four main hits I had. I think I might have one more. I don't play Ride. I refuse. It's like sometimes I'll do one chorus just because they won't shut up.
Give the people.
But you guys have a bunch of the cell phones. It shows like play this or one of them has like a whole paragraph on it. And you're 15 rows back. It's like, how the fuck do you want me to read that?
I don't get why people spend so much money and then just spend the whole time they got their phone up the whole time. I'm like, what are y'all doing?
Drives me nuts.
Put a beer in the hand.
Two beers.
Yeah. And they just want a guitar pick. I'm like, I know if I throw it to you, it's going to be on eBay. Like, I just know it.
Yeah. Or you're not going to catch it.
Yeah. I'm going to just enjoy the show. But it's their, whatever, third show. Yeah. I mean, right? So they should enjoy it however they want. I get a little, I don't know, irrationally mad sometimes. When they're just looking at you with the phone the whole time. Give me a pick.
I don't think that's irrational. I get mad too, and okay. I don't think it's irrational.
I just feel bad for getting mad at. They're not even my fans; they're Luke's fans. You know what I mean? Like, I have nothing to do with it. I'm just some guy. You know?
Yeah. You got nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
It's that pisses me off.
Yeah.
But what? Oh, so I play those four songs throughout the show, and then the rest of the show is all new music. Yeah. So it's all the Cowboys record, Go Down Singing record, and I do an acoustic part. I've been playing Cruise acoustic lately. I didn't play that song for a long time. Now I'm doing it just because it's part of the story. The Taylor Swift thing actually brought that back because I hadn't been playing it, and then she was at the Tight End U thing, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to play this because she was a big part of that song 12 years ago. And I did it, and I had no idea what, like, Taylor Swift's fan. I didn't know they were that intense. They're crazy.
Yeah.
How did she have a part in that song?
She tweeted about it. So it was moving, and then she tweeted about it, and that was huge. I was living with Brian at the time. I don't think Tyler lived in that house, but I remember Brian saying, like, dude, Taylor Swift was tweeting about Cruise. I was like, oh, shit. I don't know where it was on the charts.
Did you know
at that
that?
Point.
Nah.
No, I didn't know that.
So she Baby You a Song, something like that. So I did it, just kind of told the story. Thank you, Taylor. She was up top. I couldn't see her. Started playing it. The band didn't know it because they'd learned Hall River, which I was going to play a song about a Native American woman killing a priest to a bunch of Taylor Swift fans. I don't think they would have got it. So I took that song out.
You gotta know your crowd.
Yeah.
Luckily, I figured it out that night and played Cruise instead. And then halfway through, like, every single head turns up and look up, and she's up there singing along. It was cool. It was a cool little moment of, like, 12 years later, whatever it was, just to, like, hey, for real, thank you for helping this song out all those years ago. And then we went to Luke's bar after, and I ended up going to say bye to her, and we talked music for like 45 minutes after. That's all she wanted to talk about, which was really cool. That girl's legit. She's not built that empire by being dumb.
Yeah.
It was cool to talk to her about music, and she writes with the Swedes a lot. She said you need to find a good couple Swedes to write with. They'll change your songwriting forever. So I guess I'll maybe do that.
Was that like Max Martin or something?
Max Martin was he? Yeah. We talked a good bit about him. But, yeah, Cruise was just like a moment of like, hey, thanks for helping the song out all those years ago.
You know, it's so funny. A friend of mine that I went to college with ended up playing Beyonce's band. And I was like, what's Beyonce like? And she's like, I never believed in the Illuminati until I started working for Beyonce.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit.
How so?
She's just, I don't know. She's just like so secretive and everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I feel like with Taylor, it's like, obviously, I don't know her. You've hung out with her a few times, but it's like she just seems to be a lot more like open, I guess. Book. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know Beyonce.
No, me either. I'd like to. Maybe we could write together.
Get some Swedes in there.
Yeah.
If you're out with Taylor, you're going to want some Swedes.
Yeah.
Dude, we'll do it in Appalachia, dude.
Yeah. What the hell?
Be a four-way. Five-way. Throw a Swede in there.
Get a Swede on an Appalachia record? That could be crazy.
We're planning it all out right now, dude.
I've already written like four songs that I really like for it, but I wasn't meaning to write them. Those before I was like really locked in on this Eldora record. Mm-hmm. But I've got a couple that I really like, but I'm gonna go write the Appalachia record and Carolina, see what pops up. Because there's a couple that I'm not sure are gonna fit on that, which is gonna be different because Eldora was 1 through 12. We wrote 1, we recorded it first, 2, we recorded it second. We just did it in the order that we wrote them in.
Oh,
that's crazy. So I didn't ever have to think about it. That's why, like, the first 4 of the 5 songs are all slower, you know, more storytelling, slower songs, because that's just the order I normally wouldn't order that way. I'd spread them out, but we really wanted to do it the way we wrote them, in the order.
It's like the Chase Rice cinematic universe. Like, yeah. I think it's fucking cool, man.
Yeah. I hope other people do. Yeah. I feel like we're in a world that it just takes one song to really blow up. Yeah. Like, I need a new song to blow up. The last hit I had was Drinking Beer, Talking God Amen, and that was like 2020. So I think we're really, really building this really strong foundation, and we're just now hitting it. It's like my third record. I started over 10 years into my career, which is, I wish I could punch myself in the face for that. And I wish I'd have done this then, but it took all of that leading up to where I'm at now. So there's no looking back on that. But yeah, we're really locked into what I do now. And that's a fun feeling.
Yeah.
It's a scary feeling too, knowing that what I do isn't necessary. It's not what's popping on TikTok. It's not what radio's playing right now, but that doesn't mean it can't happen still.
They would have said the same thing about Zach Top like 3 years ago.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you really never know the direction that the thing's going, and all it takes is one song, not even by you, but by something that's like in that world, and the orbit shifts, and it starts revolving around that thing.
Absolutely. You know? And we're not focusing at all on like, how do we create something that's going to blow up on this world or that world or TikTok, or we're not, that doesn't even, like, Oscar wouldn't even let me do that, which is great. It's good to have someone that has your back on that, where if you throw out an idea, he's like, dude, fuck that. We're doing what we do, which Oscar says a lot, or I say a lot to him. It's like, we go back and forth on that, which is, we're a great team together. We haven't created something that's popped yet, but what does that even mean? Like, maybe we have, I don't know. Like, when I play Circa, people are digging the shit out of it live, or Two-Tone. Yeah. People are digging the shit out of it live. So streaming numbers, I don't know where they're at, but it's nothing that's like, I remember when Drink a Beer, Talk God Amen was going, every week they'd be like, yeah, it's a 2 million streams this week. And I'm like, oh, that seems pretty good. I'd die to have 2 million streams a week now on a song.
Well, labels are pumping money into it too, brother. You know, like, you got to think about that too. It's like, every label wants to make it known that every artist that is on there, when it's working, it's really working. Yeah. So they're pumping money into it. It's your money they're pumping into it.
Yeah, there's the Illuminati, bro.
Yeah.
It's, fuck, I wasn't getting that anymore. It's like, I know y'all motherfuckers can make this pop. Like, there's no reason Bad Daddy Big Cold Beer should have died at 47 on the charts. It's, people dig it live. They're screaming the shit out of it. Lowcast just had a number one song, and their streaming numbers aren't crazy on that. So the bullshit excuse of you have to have streaming to get a number one song, they just proved that wrong. So
ouch.
Well, we've talked about it. I've talked about it with those guys. They've openly said, like, our streaming numbers aren't crazy, but we still did this, which is a badass thing for them to do. So I look at that, I'm like, okay, well, you guys are not focusing on this, like, you're not killing it for me at radio, which is what I need a label for. They pay for shit, and then they get your stuff on radio or DSPs. None of that was happening, so I was like, okay, wait a minute. So they're still making 90%, 85% on my streaming, while I'm not getting any of these services. I'm gonna fucking leave. Like, it wasn't even a thought of should I do this. It was like, I'd be dumb not to. And then on top of that, I get it that they got other artists that they have to work with and figure out when they're going to pay for my record, when they're going to put it out, compared to Lainey or Jason or Jelly or whoever. But when you don't feel like you're the priority there, and they're just getting in the way, which I would have this conversation with them face to face. I'm not knocking them. I just said I understand that they have this other stuff they got to think about. But if I'm not the priority, then fuck it. I'm out.
Well, and that's not that label per se. That's just the nature of the business. Yeah, you know what I mean?
And Broken Bow was awesome. I still have a great relationship with them. Funny enough, I still need to send this to Loba. I got on him one time. I said, guys, we need to talk. Like, everything seemed to be like that. It was just, it didn't seem like priority. Like, I'm walking through the airport. I'm seeing Luke's face over here, Marin's face over here, Kelsey's face, Blake Shelton. Why aren't we putting any of our artists, me included, in the airport? Like, that's one example. I just threw that one out, and then I threw a couple others out, but that's all he wanted to talk about. He's like, the airport's not going to do shit. I'm like, well, okay, well, what about the other six things I fucking said? And it was a funny argument that we had. But today, I forgot I got home from Texas today. I was walking through the airport, and it was Lainey Wilson, or it was Lainey or Jelly, I can't remember. But Broken Bow artist in the fucking airport. I told you, Loba. If you'd have put me in the airport, I wouldn't have left.
Fuck. Oh, that's so funny.
But yeah, no, it was just, you're right. It's just the nature of the business. I have no hard feelings towards them. They were a great partner. On top of that, I wasn't giving them music to work with. I just said this stuff. The last two records, we had some stuff that could have worked on radio. I think Bad Daddy Big Cold Beer should have been a bigger hit. But because that was the only thing I put on the last two records that was like down the middle. Mm-hmm. This sounds like radio. This new record, like, I wouldn't hand that in and say, hey guys, go crush it at radio with this. Like, that would be unreasonable to me to ask. So that's why we haven't taken anything to radio, because it doesn't feel like it fit.
Well, and it's expensive. You know what I mean? Like, independent.
So expensive.
Yeah, independent radio promotions, very expensive. Label radio promotions, very expensive. Realistically, too, like, what's that doing for you other than acquiring new fans, right?
Which is important.
It is very important, but there's other ways you can do that. Yeah. The other ways you can do that is, like, you can do ads on freaking Spotify and get it to new fans. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's plenty of places to spend the money.
Yeah. Doing that.
But there's plenty of places to spend the money. You know, if you got the money to spend, there's plenty of places to spend it.
Yeah, and I don't have millions of dollars sitting around that I can just blow on praying we get a song to pop.
It's got two tones to maintain.
I was in the shop last week. I drove it to interviews, and the radiator busted. So yeah, that was fun.
Well, you got another great truck out there right now. So
that one I just got back from the shop too.
Yeah,
I have two working cars. Last week I had zero. That was in the shop.
We gotta get you a Subaru, dude.
I gotta get like a Subaru or a Toyota, Camry. I need to get like a newer functioning car. My main truck, like only new truck that I've got is it's out in Montana, so it works great out there. But when I'm home, she's driven me. We've had three interviews now where one of them, what happened? One of them, the tire blew.
Yeah, radiator.
And something
of flux capacitor or something.
The flux capacitor on the Avalanche went out. The Avalanche. I've got an Avalanche that usually works pretty well, but I blew a motor last year in Georgia on that one.
Wow.
You're right. I'm a Subaru.
Yeah, that's why I bought mine in 2020. I'm like, I'll probably never tour again. Better get something cheap. And then, but we back now.
We back. Yeah. That was the tweet that I, or the Instagram that I posted. Pretty sure Jason Aldean did his We Back tour like the year of 2020, like before.
Yeah.
It all went. But I posted the show that I did during COVID, and it was, I think that was the caption, We Back.
Did you do like some show where you got in trouble or
a
what?
A lot of trouble.
Really?
Hey, that's how it all works.
Who had the most in trouble shows during COVID? You?
Maybe Chase.
Did we talk about this last time?
No.
Chainsmokers. Yeah, same weekend.
Yeah.
Chainsmokers.
They were hating for a while. It's like, just get the freaking flu, everyone. It's fine. Yeah.
I get it, because some people didn't really know, but at the same time, I mean, looking back now, I mean, it was stupid. Like, everybody shut up. No. Yeah. But
hindsight again.
Yeah absolutely. Hindsight.
But it was I just get a text from Scotty, who's at Broken Bow still. And every now and then he just says, We back. Almost ruined my career, Scott.
All's well that ends well, I guess.
I'll tell you this. The real fans were excited that the shows were back, right? Oh, like, we were craving it. Yeah. The people that go out to all the shows and are the ones that are breathing on each other in the pit, those people were not bitching about you being back, brother.
No.
The people that were bitching about you being back were the ones that never went to a show.
Yeah. It was... My publicist is gonna kill me. She's like, "Why are you bringing that up again?" Like, because nobody cares now.
Yeah, at this point.
It was pretty damn safe compared to looking back. I'm like, okay, you didn't really do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But we are back now.
Yeah, fully back. Yeah.
Have you guys been to Europe?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's another thing. I think it was 2022. And I was like, why have we not been to Europe yet? Well, the first excuse was COVID still kind of the thing. And it's 2025 now. Still haven't been back.
Yeah, go fucking gig over there, dude. Let's get this going. Hey, write that down.
On it.
We're figuring out all what Chase.
I want to go back to Europe.
Yeah.
We've got his 2026 figured out.
Yeah.
He's going to Sweden to write and in Europe play shows, and then he's going
the Swedes.
To. Yeah, dude.
I got to write a record with the Swedes
about Appalachia.
And we'll take all those songs and sing them in Europe
with Beyonce and T Swift.
Yes, featuring
and
Beyonce
Oscar
and the whole Illuminati.
Yeah.
You guys are gonna get me killed.
Yeah. We should work in management, bro.
Yeah. I kinda do now. But.
Yeah. Right?
That would be fun.
No. Maybe not.
You're hired.
Yeah.
I like the creativity we're coming up with today.
Just tour Europe, it's not a logistical nightmare at all.
Yeah.
Actually, I do think that's why we haven't been back.
Oh, it's like hornet's nest.
I think
bro.
The last time we did it was like or talked about doing it, it was like, yeah, okay, well you're gonna lose $75,000 to do it.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, we can play in America.
Yeah,
Colby Akovic just went over the first time. He's like, yeah, I had to put down like easy six figures, just cash up front,
get it
to,
rolling.
Yeah, just
was
to hope.
He? That's what you got to do. I mean, you got to build it. But we had built it. We played there three times, and I'll go back acoustic. I mean, because I don't know if they necessarily care.
No, dude, it's
I just
like
want to go back.
Absolutely, do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists do that, like Ashley did that, and, you know, Charlie did that, or whoever. A lot of people have done it. I think they're just happy to see some American people actually doing the American country music.
They want
to
know you care. Like, we headlined a festival in Australia this year because we've so just sick. Put in the work. Mm-hmm. Canada, we've headlined some festivals up there, been direct support on some of those. So if you just go, people are, they care. They
and
really
they're
want
grateful.
To hear it. Yeah, it's really cool.
They do their homework, too, I found. It's like they know the deep cuts.
Yeah.
Like when I played in Australia with Michael Ray, it was like they knew his deep cuts. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's wild.
We did a song called On Tonight, the UK edition, because when I sang it over there, like they're stomping. It was like, oh my God, they know this song more than they know hits. Mm-hmm. So we gave them their own version.
That's sick.
No idea what. Have you guys seen Searching for Sugar Man?
Never heard of it.
It's so sick. It's a documentary about. This is that's what leading into it. Like, I don't know what will happen when we do go back to Europe because it could be huge or two people could show up. I don't know. But Searching for Sugar Man, this guy, I think it was 60s, 70s, 80s. I think it was 70s. But he put out music over in South Africa and quit doing music after he put out some stuff. Never became huge over there, but he was doing the thing. And moved to Detroit. And this is just 10, 15 years ago. Somebody found him. Like, they did the documentary. Cause the whole documentary, they're looking for this guy. Like, where is he? Because he exploded in South Africa again.
Oh, cool.
Like, massive. And nobody knew where he was. And he was found in Detroit, just living a normal life. And this guy finds him and shows him everything. Like, here's the numbers. Here's what's going on in South Africa. And gets him to go back. And he sold out, like, a stadium or a huge arena the first
That's literally what happened to Kip Moore.
Yeah.
South Africa, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He is Sugar. What was it called?
Searching for Sugar Man.
Sugar Man. I want to watch that.
It's sick. But yeah, Kip, doesn't he do like stadiums or huge
arenas?
Yeah,
he did a stadium. Like some PD played like Slow Hard over there. And then they're like, we'll book you for a show. He's like, I'm not going to Africa to play one show. And like, well, it'll be a big theater. And then it was like, they sold the theater out, sold the arena out. And then they did it at the soccer stadium or something.
God.
Crazy.
I think Cody Johnson was in Brazil.
Yeah.
Which I know country music's, it's more cowboy country music's big in Brazil, but that's cool.
I just saw Kojo like 3 days ago in Orlando. It's pretty sick. It's pretty fun. Pretty
what
fun
were you doing in Orlando?
Visiting my parents.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you just went and saw him play?
Yeah, Jody texted me, the fiddle player, and was like, hey, I'm like 30 miles from you right now because he saw my Instagram story or something. He was how many tickets do you want? I was like, four. He's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, he's crushing.
Yeah.
Damn. Cody stuff's wild. It's, and like, he has that thing where he just like almost, you feel like almost he's a preacher up there too.
Yeah,
like
he's got that. Set. Yeah.
It's crazy.
I remember him during COVID. He was preaching pretty good. He was like, they're going to tell me not to kiss my wife. I'm like, I don't know if anyone's saying that, but okay. Whatever.
This is showman. Yeah. I got up last night. We did an event in Austin, and it was for the floods and the girls that were lost. And this is actually Patrick Marsh says love big, like little. That's his daughter. She was lost. He was a college college football teammate of mine. Each dressing room had a letter from the parents, and my dressing room had from Patrick, which I thought was cool. I knew if I'd have read it, I'd have been like, Patrick Marsh, what the fuck? But he texted me like a month before, said, hey, man, just want to say I appreciate you doing this. But I get up there, like, I can't help but imagine, like, Carly Pierce got up there and gave this speech, Kojo speech. Kojo would have gotten up there and just, like, delivered a sermon.
For sure.
And crushed it. I got up there and I was like, hey, I'm from, I like stuttering my words, like, I'm from North Carolina. I'm not from Texas. I don't know why I'm here. And, like, I'm stuttering my words, saying the dumbest shit you can say to this crowd. And I'm harder on myself than I should be, but I just, like, all I could think about after I did it was, like, you just sucked. And I did not give the speech, but that you talking about Kojo made me think, like, I was thinking about it earlier. I'm like, why can't I get up there and do that? That's just not me. I'm not that guy that's going to give up there. And if I do give that speech, it's going to be the realest shit you've ever heard. And if I nail it, it's going to be impactful, but I don't do that often. I just don't have that in me.
We you're talking about Red Rocks. When we played, Peyton Manning came out and gave us like a pre-huddle speech or whatever.
Hell yeah.
It was fucking awesome. I was like, oh my God.
You ready to go run through a wall?
Yeah. Honestly, Luke is extremely good at it too. So
is he?
Yeah, but it was like, I mean, I'm sure you guys do similar things too, right? Beforehand?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a little
ritual or something?
We got a little ritual we do.
Yeah.
It's from my high school. I'm tired right now. I'm exhausted. We've done 45 shows.
Dude, like, you're good, bro.
Well, I'm not even talking about right. I'm just talking about during the year. Like, we do a good, better, best speech, which is my high school chant, and then we got a bunch of old shit that's kind of came along over the last 12 years of touring. But like lately, it's been like we're sitting outside the bus watching football. I just look at them, I'm like, good, better, best. Yeah, all right. Like, I got to figure something out the back half of the year to keep people fired up to do shows, because half the time I don't even want to go out there. And then you get out there, and if it's a good crowd, it's great.
Yeah.
But when you do 48 shows, first half of the year, and you got 30 more to go, you're like, fuck, man.
And I will say to people that are listening to this thinking, like, why would you not want to do that? Like, it creeps up on you. Ugh. And being tired and not sleeping and traveling, it happens to every artist that I've ever worked for. Sometimes you're about to go on stage, and of course you want to be like, well, you should be so thankful, and you are. But sometimes you're like, God, I just want to sit on the couch right now and do nothing.
Yeah.
And you get out there, and then, you know, if the crowd gives it back and you give it to the crowd, then it's like, you get that adrenaline pumping.
It's all fixed, yeah.
Yeah, bro.
But if the crowd's not giving it back,
tough.
It's a tough night.
Tough.
And especially when you're doing the same set list for already 45 shows or similar set list. You know, I've changed it up even wherever we were Saturday. I changed it up because I was just like, or Friday. I got tired of it. So we switched it up a little bit. And you got to figure out a way to finish out the year strong. But sometimes it is harder than people think. I mean, you're singing the same shit every night.
Yeah.
But like you said, that it's on you to entertain. That's first and foremost. But if they're not giving it back, I'll call them out sometimes. Boots and Hearts this year, I had to call them out. I was like, do you guys give a fuck that I'm here right now? I was pissed. I'm like, we're up here. We're trying. It doesn't seem like you guys knew I was coming. You knew I was a part of this festival. Did you learn one of these fucking songs? Because when I sang one of my hits early, they didn't give anything back, and that's when I got pissed. I was like, man, I get it, we're here to entertain you, but if you don't want me here, I don't have to be here. I can go home.
Yeah.
And I've had plenty of shows like that this year. That's how I felt. But at the end also another thing I've talked with my drummer about is, like, it's a different crowd than we're singing to now than we were even 5 years ago. Like, a lot of these people are just listening, man. And he's reminded me of that. It's like, yeah, that's a good point. These are more story songs.
Yeah.
And I noticed, like, we played, and the festivals are weird because it's not like your homies.
They're not there for you.
And we played in Vail, speaking of Colorado. We played the Jazz Aspen Fest. I don't know why I said Vail. Aspen. And it was like, you know how Aspen is. It's like these super wealthy people.
Yeah.
That's like not our usual tailgating, beer drinking, blue collar folks. And so, like, I played the show, and like people are sitting down, and they have like the big floppy sun hats. Shit. You know what I mean? Like the Dumb and Dumber Aspen vibes. And it was just kind of like, we got off stage. I'm like, I asked the people that were there, I'm like, did they like it? Or like, what's going on? And they're like, oh yeah, everyone liked it. But they're just kind of like chilling, and they're like VIP booth vibes, and there's like more seating in the festival than usual.
Yeah.
It's not like headlining a club show or something.
Yeah. And or your own arena show or whatever, stadiums or whatever. It's like, shit, I've seen some stuff on Wallen shows, and I'm just like, God, that is, fuck, I would love to just be him for a second. Where you look at it, and everybody's screaming every single syllable, and you're only doing 20, however many shows a year. That's got to be freaking nice. I'm not saying he hadn't earned it. He has.
Yeah.
But damn, that'd be nice.
I mean, he's the, that's the top.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's absolutely the top.
Yeah, and he's, I mean, he's bigger than country. You know, he's one of the biggest pop stars on the planet right now, too, which is crazy. You know,
massive.
Yeah.
And if he plays a festival, he's in ownership of the festival.
Yeah. You know? And I made the conscious decision to get away from that style of music. So that's on me. But I'd really love for people to start paying attention to this new stuff. That'd be nice. I also left my label. It's like I didn't choose an easy route.
Yeah.
Right.
But let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Please.
I think it'd be easier to sleep at night making music that you love than the opposite. Right.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think that's
I've done it. I did that.
Yeah.
And it didn't satisfy me. And I look, I have old videos like from Gonna Wanna Tonight, even Gonna Wanna Tonight. Like that was a number two song. People don't come close to singing that now like they used to. I have an old video of Milwaukee, them singing that. I just remember looking at it and like, holy shit. But I was also, when you're the young gun, you're the new guy coming up, people are real intrigued just to see what you're going to do or who you are. You got about 3 years there to really take advantage, and I didn't. And now I'm stuck in the grind. But it also gives me time to figure out, all right, well, I'll step away for a second, figure out who the hell I actually am. And that's what's leading to these records I'm making now that are records that nobody else could make. And that's the only real way I know to explain it. When you hear it, you're going to know that's me. So we're building something very different. I have no idea what it's going to turn into, but I know that's the formula that I'm going to do. And if you're down for that, you're really going to like my music. If you're not down for that, you may not like it. So that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's what fandom's about. It's about finding the stuff that you think is, you know, your lane of the thing, right? And honestly, dude, I think these are your best records that you've ever done. Yeah, and I listened to all the old shit, too. Yeah, you know, I was at the Chase Rice shows when it was, like, lots of tracks and things like that.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. But the stuff that you're putting out now feels like it's meaningful to you.
It is.
Right? And realistically, dude, the fans should be a thought, but they really should be an afterthought of you making the art that you feel in your heart right now. And I think that's what you're doing.
There's a, I actually have it as one of my backgrounds. It's a quote from a book. Why is my shit not loading?
Probably bad Wi-Fi.
But it's not Max Martin. I have him on my mind right now because of Taylor. But it'll come up here in a second. But it's says everything that any artist should, you know, live by, basically. And I think it's like something like the best way to serve the crowd is to ignore them.
Yeah.
And that's not saying ignore them like at a live show. No. I think, but stop thinking about what do people want to hear? What people want to hear is you. And like, they want to hear your stories and your truth. The best way to serve the audience is to ignore them. Rick Rubin.
Yeah. And that's it's super true. And the thing that you see, the thing that Taylor Swift does extremely well, is she gives little bits of who she is to her fans so they all feel like they're her best friend, right? That's the things that fans want. They want to know who you are as a person.
Yeah.
They want to know what makes you tick, and then the songs that are important to you become important to them.
Yes.
You know, like that's really the thing.
Yeah, and I'm just now scratching the surface of that. Like I said, this is really record three for me. And it's record three as an independent artist, which is a hard way to go. It's not being blasted into their face. So I'm going to keep doing it. Like there's never been a thought. It's just a frustrating time where it's like, God damn, like how do we get people to really give a shit about this? And the only thing Oscar and I can come up with is just keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, realistically, man, it's if anyone knew how to make everyone give a fuck about it, then everyone would give a fuck about everything, you know? So it's like at the end of the day, with a clear conscience, you saying I'm giving my best effort, I'm putting out the thing that I think is the best representation of me at the time. That's what's going to either move the needle, or at least you can put your head on the pillow at the end of the day and know that that's what you were doing.
Absolutely. You know? There's a text that I sent to Ebi who's my publicist, a couple weeks ago. She was talking about something with the record. I said, the Eldora album. I said, I'm not in this for fame or money, especially not for fame. Money wouldn't suck. But I want to be proud of my music at the end of my life. If that costs me the other two, I'm okay with it.
Let's go.
That's the way to do it, man.
That's where it's at. That doesn't mean it's not hard and frustrating sometimes. No. But I'm also coming off of 3 shows and tired as shit right now.
Yeah, fluid.
That also leads to real conversations too. So
yeah,
I've noticed between you guys and the waitress at Sweet Milk, the restaurant I ate at before I came here, I was done. I just wanted to sit on the couch. And then talking to her, she was just cool as hell. And I was short with her at first, and then by the end of lunch, it was like we had a great conversation. She's cool, really cool lady.
Yeah.
And then just talking through shit makes you feel better.
Man, that's what it's all about. Yeah. And I mean, realistically, that's the stuff that fans need to hear too, because everyone goes through stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone questions if they're making the right choices in life or questions what they did in the past and what it means.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, all you can do is move forward.
Yeah.
Right. And moving forward the best way you know, impacting the most people and the most fans that you can, is what's going to move the needle the most. Yeah.
And Oscar and I have had a lot of good talks about that, who's the producer.
Yeah.
It's really cool to have somebody in your corner that's really believes in what we're doing.
Yeah.
So.
And he's wildly talented too.
Yeah.
You know,
he's really cool because even Foolin', which we just put out with Hannah McFarlane, that doesn't sound like my album. We did it a completely different way. We had a click track on that one. We had the, A-lister musicians play on it.
Yeah.
Rivers Rutherford played on it, who wrote it with her.
Yeah.
So it sounds, he can adapt to the artist.
Yeah.
And her and I've talked a lot about that. She's openly admitting, I don't know what my sound is yet. And it's perfect. Then keep doing what you're doing. Figure that out really first.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a songwriter. She's a badass songwriter.
Yeah.
And she's going to figure out a way to put that in her music and let people see who she is through that, I think. I hope. And I don't think she's going, any other direction other than who she is.
We love Hannah, too. We got to see her kind of before it all started to pop and, know the quality of a human that she is and, the struggles that she's gone through in life. And you hear a lot of that in some of her songs. Mm. You know what I mean? But that's the same thing. It's that's the stuff that's meaningful to people. When you can hear the emotion and the sincerity in the songs, that's what makes people heal. That's the therapy for us as music fans.
Yeah.
You know?
Her and I wrote a song called If Heaven Had a Hotline, and Corey Asbury, and me and her. And it's just, man, when she's sitting there singing it, I was just like, oh,
she's a great singer too.
I believe every word she's saying. And she nitpicked every freaking line in that song, but I'd rather have that than a young artist that's in there I don't know, whatever, it's cool.
Sounds good.
Gave a shit.
Yeah.
So she's and definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah, she's a badass. We love her.
Inspiring.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's this art shit is hard, man. You know?
Especially when half of us are nuts.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not a little nuts, you're not going to be an artist, brother.
You're not going to be able to do it.
That's how it works.
Yeah, and you got to want it.
You got to want it, and you got to believe.
I remember when Ready, Set, Cruise hit, Ready, Set, Roll hit, Gonna Want It Tonight hit, and I was like, this is the easiest shit I've ever done in my life. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
And now that was 2014, I think, that Gonna Want It Tonight hit. New people, Sony came in. It's I don't know what it'd be like to be one of those top artists at a label. That's not true. I was for those songs, and I was for Broken Bow, for Drink a Beer, and Eyes on You. I thought it was so easy when those songs were popping, and then it wasn't for a couple of years. Then Broken Bow, and then it got easy again. But something felt off with those periods of time, just because even though I was having hits, it wasn't happening like it was those first 3 years, where it was like, oh, I'm the young guy. This people are fucking going nuts over me. I'm gonna be in stadiums next year. Even when Eyes on You and Drink a Beer was happening, it was like, we're still in some sort of grind. What's up here? And I think that was the main thing behind all that, was just I was continuing to chase. Sam Hunt came out, and I was like, all right, how do I make a record that sounds like Sam Hunt? Florida Georgia Line first. I was like, how do I make a record that sounds like Florida Georgia Line? That's what the best thing about COVID was for me. 2020 was it all hit the fan with that show I did. It just wiped everything out, where I was just like, all right, I went into full fuck it mode. And it was just like, I'm going to do what I want to do for the first time in my career.
Yeah, like you cracked the eggs and now you're making the omelet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And honestly, as fans, we want to hear the realest shit, the version of you that you want to put out there.
Yeah.
Right. And whether that's with a freaking click track on it, you know, or yeah. freaking large production in the tracks, or whether yeah. it's you and a guitar.
Yeah.
If that's the thing that you think is the best expression of you, that's what we want to hear, man.
Yeah. And that's where we've gotten to.
Yeah.
And so now it's just double down. I'm going to go to Sweden and write Appalachia.
Absolutely, brother.
I love it. Shit. Well, man, thanks for hopping back on the pod with us.
Yeah, this is great.
It's been fun, man.
Yeah, I needed a little therapy session today.
Let's do it, bro. You're welcome anytime.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
We appreciate you and your
Can
time.
Can you move your studio closer to town?
We are. We're
working on it, literally.
You'll be the first to know.
This truck might not make it home.
Yeah. We appreciate you risking your radiators and tires to come out here and be with us.
Well, Rhiannon's here, so I figure worst case scenario, she can give me a hitch.
Oh, man. Well, guys, thanks for listening to the Rage Party podcast. Make sure you listen to Eldora, and I know me and Kurt will for sure.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, all right, y'all. Thanks so much. Bye.
Cheers.